Hello once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. House maintenance and home improvement projects can be daunting, and if you're not handy with a hammer or interior design savvy, they could be impossible to do without the help of an outside contractor. It is easy to get in over your head, but don't worry. Darren Tracy joins us today. He's a licensed professional engineer with extensive experience in construction, renovation, and property management. He's a Building Performance Institute certified building analyst and a licensed master plumber. He helms the West Branch Engineering Consulting and Construction Firm, which specializes in unique projects, and he is a director of the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers. So if you're planning a home improvement project in the near future, or if you're stuck in the middle of that kitchen remodeling job or you don't know what to do to finish it, now's the time to call 800-348-2551, 800-348-2551. You can also email us, voxpop at wamc.org, tweet at WAMCVoxPop, or go to Facebook, facebook.com/WAMCRadio, and there'll be a Vox Pop post there. But again, the number to call is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy, welcome back to the program.
Thank you, Ray.
It's been a while. What's new?
A few things. I have been doing some construction consulting for Cafe Lena in Saratoga Springs.
Oh, terrific.
And they're undergoing an extensive renovation, much-needed renovation.
Mm.
So I'm helping them out, have my hands in quite a few different other matters. I am volunteering for an organization called the Capital District Chapter of the New York State Society of Professional Engineers, long word.
Right.
We're under the umbrella of the National Society of Professional Engineering, and we do good things around. One of the things that we do is raise money for high school seniors who will be pursuing an engineering degree, and we offer those scholarships to any high school senior in a 12-county radius of the Capital District.
Oh, terrific.
So I would encourage any seniors to apply.
Do you guys have a website?
We do. It's capitaldistrictpe.org, and that's spelled CAPDISTPE.org.
Fantastic. Darren Tracy is our guest, and gosh, I guess it was last fall you were on the last time, and you had a great project that you were working on. It looked like something I couldn't even comprehend how you would actually fix this. But you had a boathouse up in the Adirondacks that was sinking into the mud or whatever. It was drooping into the water. And your project was to stabilize this. And I see in the Journal of Light Construction, not a magazine, I imagine, with an enormous subscription list, but some great pictures of this project. And what a project it was.
It was an interesting project for us. It was an example, a typical example of a non-typical project that we try to focus on with our construction company.
So, obviously, it was a success. The first pictures, and it's a nicely illustrated, I guess you took the photos, but the first picture is of this boathouse sort of listing to the right, and literally the lower right corner is underwater. And by the end, you have that thing propped up. How long did that job take?
It didn't take that long. It took us about a week.
Really?
Really, yeah.
And you were in wetsuits the whole time, or at least part
not,
of the
not
time?
The whole time. We were in the water quite a bit. It wasn't that deep, you know, 6-7 feet at the deepest. We did have to do some diving.
That's amazing. And you've done that before?
Yes. I've been diving since 1991 for construction projects.
That's great. So that was up at Loon Lake, huh?
That's right. And there are several Loon Lakes in the Adirondacks. This is the Loon Lake that's northeast of Saranac Lake, between Saranac Lake and Plattsburgh.
Uh-huh.
It's pretty remote.
Darren Tracy is our guest. The lines are loaded, 800-348-2551. Let's go to the phones and Mark. Mark, you got to turn your radio down, okay?
You got it.
Okay, you're on.
Okay. I have a question about solar panels. Pros and cons versus buying and leasing. And it seems that everyone I talk to about solar panels, they all keep trying to push me away from, like, getting my own battery so I can store my own energy for blackouts or things like that. I just want to be able to keep my own energy.
See, I'm with you. I'm with you on that, Mark. And I've often thought if I was going to do that, I would want to have my own lead-acid batteries. But the last time I talked to somebody about this who was a kind of an expert, it was not the greatest idea at this time economically. What do you know about this, Darren?
Okay. Well, I wouldn't consider myself an expert, but we do have solar panels on our home, and I do know something about it. A drawback to batteries is the cost.
Mm.
So, you know, that's what's one big consideration. And the nice thing about not having the batteries is you can sell the electricity back to the utility company. And in our case, we generate basically as much energy as we use throughout the year. So at the end of the year, we get a few bucks back from the utility
company. Wow,
that's
incredible.
Now, we own our panels. And Mark asked about the difference between owning and leasing. Well, if you own them, you got to come up with the money up front. If you lease them, I'm thinking you don't have to come up with any money, but you have to sign an agreement to buy the power back from the company that fronts the money and puts the panels up.
Yeah.
So I hope that helps, Mark.
Mark, thank you for the call. Let's go to Bill in Canajoharie. Bill.
Hi, I have a 1920s bungalow on the side of a lake. It's not in the water, but the soil is very sandy and it's very moist, and it's a three-sided concrete foundation with a chimney that's also freestanding in the middle, and the chimney rises 2 or 3 inches, or the house rises 2 or 3 inches. And I'm wondering if I put a vapor barrier in there, or if I close in the other side, or if there are other alternatives to stabilize this old place that's on sitting on a sandy, wet situation.
Okay, Bill, I'm not really sure what the problem is. Is it sinking into the ground?
It seems like the house is sinking into the ground. There are cracks in the foundation. I don't know how good this foundation is. It was, like I say, a 1920s house bungalow. So.
Okay. Is it out of level? When you're
walking inside, is it noticeably out of level? I think it's seasonally out of level.
Seasonally out of level. Well, that means...
And there are concrete piers that need to be shimmed.
Okay, if it's seasonably out of level, that tells me that the foundation does not go below the frost line, and it's heaving in the winter. Are you turning this into a four-season home or just using it seasonally?
Just using it as a camp.
Well, it may be satisfactory the way it is.
Oh, great. So no vapor barrier?
Well,
no,
a vapor barrier is always a good thing if you can install the vapor barrier underneath a concrete slab. Because
there's no slab. It's the ground under.
Okay, is there a crawl space?
It's a tapered crawl space. I can get to just about everywhere with a stick.
Definitely install a vapor barrier to minimize the amount of moisture wicking up through the soil.
Okay.
If you want to contact me at my website and send me a picture, I can help you
out.
What
is your website?
It's Darren at, my email is darren@westbranchinc.com, spelled D-A-R-R-E-N. At West, the direction West, branch, as in branch of the river, of a river, inc.com. And the website is West Branch, Inc.
All right, Bill, thanks a lot for the call. Our number here is 800-348-2551. We're joined by Darren Tracy today. We talk construction and home improvement, and Diane in Saugerties is next. Diane.
Hi.
Hi.
I do a lot of renovation, and I like to reuse things and shop at the Habitat Restore. And I need to put in a shower, and it's a prefab stall shower.
Okay.
Unfortunately, the plumbing is on the wrong side, and there's a hole. There's about a 4-inch hole on the wrong wall.
Okay.
Of the shower stall.
Okay.
So I would like to glue something over that and use it anyway.
Okay.
What would you suggest for glue?
Okay.
Use your imagination.
Really?
Yeah. Are you talking about for the...
What I would glue, but what glue should I use?
A silicone made for tub and shower would probably work well. And then when you install this cover plate, this discussion plate, I would liberally coat the backside with the silicone, and it probably would have a mildicide in it to minimize mildew. And I would tape that in place with masking tape so it doesn't creep down before the silicone sets.
Hmm.
So just something as simple as silicone caulk.
Silicone for tub and shower. Okay. I have another question.
All right, very quickly.
Okay, flooring. Hardwood flooring versus floating engineered hardwood flooring.
Okay, I'm not sure what engineered hardwood flooring is. Floating, but I can comment on the floating. Floating might be used over top of concrete, where it would be difficult to nail conventional hardwood strip flooring because there's nothing to nail into.
Right.
So that would be an application of the floating floor.
All right. Diane, we got to take a break here, but thank you for the call. Darren Tracy is our guest. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. We're just getting started on Vox Pop. More of your calls coming up.
Support for WAMC comes from Quality Foreign Car Care, Ballston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years. QFCC.com. The New York State Maple Producers Association, hosting Maple Weekend open houses March 19th and 20th, and April 2nd and 3rd. Details at MapleWeekend.com. Vision Excel Eye Care, Lake Katrine, New York, providing eye exams, eye care, dry eye therapy, and more, where eyewear is an art. Facebook or VisionExcelEyeCare.com. And Bodhi Spa, Yoga, and Salon, Hudson, with full-service hair care salon offering color, cuts, and blowouts. Open daily, BodhiHolisticSpa.com.
Vox Pop on WAMC. Ray Graff here. It's a home improvement edition with Darren Tracy. Our number is 800-348-2551. The Allman Brothers, all right with you then?
That's fine.
Me
yeah.
too. All right, let's go with Dan in Albany. Dan, you're on.
Yes, gentlemen, thank you. One area that's often neglected is radon detection in your basements. Can you just get a detector and do it yourself, or how do you get started on that?
Yes, you can purchase a kit in a home improvement store or hardware store, and it's pretty self-explanatory. You read the directions, leave it in the basement for a few days, whatever it calls out for, and take a reading. You have to keep the doors shut so that there's not air moving. There are a few particulars you need to pay attention to.
Yeah, there's been a lot of fraud in this area historically. How do you protect yourself if you, you know, if you're looking for someone to deal with the problem?
Well, you just said it. Do the test yourself and check that against somebody that's giving you a professional test.
Yeah.
All right.
Thank you.
You're
Thanks,
welcome.
Dan. We appreciate it. It's Vox Pop on WAMC, Northeast Public Radio, 800-348-2551. Andy in Westfield. Andy, you're on.
Hi. How are you all today?
Good. Nice to have you here.
Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have a 15-year-old colonial with an open foyer. Now, you know, the stairs sort of go up to the right side, and the left side, which connects to the open hall and foyer, you know, it's sinking a little bit. Mm. And, you know, I go downstairs and I look at it. Is there some way of stabilizing it? Because the stairs are starting to come, you know, apart, not a lot, but like a quarter of an inch from where they're attached to the wall.
That shouldn't be happening in a house that new. I would have to see it, but I'm thinking you probably don't want to put a column underneath it because that would be in the way and take away from space and aesthetics, correct?
Well, in the basement, you could, you know, put something underneath there to support it in the basement, I suppose.
It's probably not settling in the basement. It's probably settling at the second floor.
Yeah,
you can send me a picture of it, but possibly use a metal connector plate to connect two pieces of wood that might be joining.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that might be a simple solution that doesn't interfere with the aesthetics. But you can send me a picture, and I'll take a look at it.
Okay, and then I'll do that.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks, Andy. We appreciate the call. Our number is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest today, and Glenn in Round Top. Glenn, you're on.
Hi, Darren. My question is, I'm also talking about a vapor barrier down in a crawl space.
Okay.
Okay. Sometimes there's water underneath it. Is it okay to put a vapor barrier down on top of that?
Yes. In fact, if there is water, you particularly do want to put that vapor barrier down to keep the water and the humidity, increased humidity level from migrating up into your living space. definitely.
And what mil plastic would I use?
6 mil black poly would be adequate. The thicker, okay, the better, but 6 would do it.
6 will do it. And the more openings, the more air I get through it, is that better? Or
no, that's worse. Ideal, you want to isolate the atmosphere below the vapor barrier from the atmosphere above the vapor barrier. Any penetrations that you might have, such as pipe penetrations, you'd want to tape those up with duct tape. And then around the perimeter of the vapor barrier, when it intersects the wall, you want to seal that as best you can.
Okay, so I shouldn't really open it up then in the summertime.
Open what, the crawl space up?
I have those vents that are in there.
In the crawl space?
Yeah.
Okay, well, I'm glad you bring that up because that's a common misconception about crawl spaces. Older building codes used to require crawl space to be ventilated. I'm not sure if that's been updated or not, but the most current building science on that is to not ventilate a crawl space.
Really?
Absolutely, because I'll tell you what happens. You have the warm air that enters that crawl space in the summertime, and the crawl space is cooler than the outside.
Right.
And that moisture just condenses like rain.
Yeah.
I've been in crawl spaces with just incredible amounts of moisture.
Makes sense.
Just dripping like a maple tree in the spring.
Yeah.
It's not the right approach. You should treat a crawl space like a basement. Like a miniature basement.
Okay.
All right.
Insulate the perimeter walls, put a vapor barrier down on the bottom.
On the bottom.
That's correct.
Okay, very good. Yeah, I also have a house up just down the road from Loon Lake on Route 3 there that I'm trying to sell right now.
Isn't that a beautiful area, the Adirondacks?
Yeah. It's nice here. Okay, thank you very much.
Yeah, thanks a lot, Glenn. We appreciate the call. At Mary in Hudson, it's your turn.
Hello, thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
I'm calling because we have a dock on our pond, and the legs, I guess you would call the corners where the posts are in the mud and the ground below the mud, are kind of like rotted out to the point where the corners on the outside are sinking below water level. And we're just wondering, like, what kind of wood to use to replace the posts with? And then, how do you get them down in the ground when you've got like 6 foot of water?
He's an expert on this, Mary. He'll get the wetsuit on. He'll be good to go.
Wow. Well, I'll have to get one of those.
Yeah. Well, you'd use a naturally decay-resistant wood like cedar or white oak, not red oak. Red oak decays very easily.
It has to be wood?
No, you could use
plastic of some kind?
Plastic is really not that strong.
Nothing. No composite material that's strong, water resistant.
Well, it's water resistant. It's not as strong as wood or metal. If you use metal, you'd want to use hot dip galvanized steel.
We want to use wood, actually.
Okay. So you could use, if you want the natural look, you could use cedar, locust, or white oak.
Okay.
Or you could use a pressure treated lumber. Southern yellow pine, pressure-treated. You should check your regulations regarding putting pressure-treated wood in that particular body of water to what you're referring. And then you temporarily support the dock the best you can. How deep is the water? Probably 5 to 8 feet there?
Probably chest deep.
Chest deep. Well, you could get out there with a snorkel and goggles if you're so inclined, or contact a friend who may be so inclined if you're not, and temporarily support the end of the dock, and just remove the existing post and install a new one.
But how do you dig it into the ground in mud like that?
That's not so easy. It may not need to be embedded in the ground. You could possibly install a base plate on your piece of pressure-treated wood or naturally occurring preservative wood member and rest it. Yep.
Yes, I'm looking in the Journal of Light Construction right here based on his project, and I see that there's a cribbing mat there and a stone base. You have stone base underneath, so can you just lay stones down?
You could lay stones down, right? Especially if you have a muddy area, lay the stones down, and that will help minimize sinking that would be associated with the mud.
Thank you, Mary. Good luck. That sounds like a hell of a project.
You can send me a picture, and again, anybody that has any questions, they can contacted me by email and sent me a picture, and I'll give out free advice, and you know, as long as it's not too detailed, and help you out that way.
Okay, because we were afraid that we were thinking that maybe we'd have to get something like twice the diameter of the post and then have it hollow and sink it down as much as possible and then get a sump pump, pump the water out and then dig, but I guess that wouldn't work really in the end.
You could possibly do that, and you wouldn't have to get a sump pump. You could actually fill that with concrete by a method called tremie, where you would have a chute and it would be extend from above the water line down into your formwork and then pour concrete into that chute or funnel. And as it goes into the formwork, it displaces the water.
Oh,
and
amazing.
You know, it's a pretty useful way to pour a foundation underwater.
And then you just pop the wood down into the soft concrete.
You could do that, or you could use metal connectors with anchors.
Okay. Oh, wow. Well, there's a lot of varieties. Okay.
More than one way to skin a fish.
Call us back if it works.
All right.
Thanks, Mary.
Thank you so much. Bye.
This one came in via email from Bonnie, who says, for a new planned slab on a grade 1,000-square-foot studio with sinks and WC. What's that, water closet? What's WC?
Probably.
Okay. Where to compare... Okay. Let me start this again. Where to compare, an interesting spelling, blown air heat versus in-slab PEX. Upfront costs versus running costs. I've been to many online sites for each, but can't find any which compare these or these with oil furnace. I have no idea what I just read. Do you have any idea, Darren Tracy?
I do. She's trying to compare the alternative methods of heating her space with warm air, a warm air furnace, versus heating tubes that are installed in the slab.
Ah, I see.
I can tell you that it's more expensive up front to install the radiant heating in the slab.
Now I understand.
But over a longer term, that may not be the case. And also, I can say that the heating via pipes in the slab more comfortable to your person than the warm air blowing around.
Which is not all that comfortable, at least to some.
It's just more comfortable to have the heat coming up from below.
Okay, Bonnie, that's great, and I'm sorry if I butchered it. That's it's been that kind of a day, I think. Let's go to Doug in Florida, sunny Florida, Massachusetts. You're on, Doug.
Yeah, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I have my basement. I have water coming in through what I can only describe as hairline fractures in the foundation. Water leaking in where sewer pipes protrude. I had a French drain put in all around the foundation. You know, I've tried, you know, the masonry paint, and so I just, water's still coming in, so I wondered how to fix this properly and stop it.
Okay.
Okay, the best way to solve that problem, Doug, is to put a drainage system around the perimeter of your foundation on the outside, and then run a drain line by gravity to daylight. In order to do that, you have to have a site that's sloped in order for gravity to work, the pipe to be pitched enough so it can get to daylight. Do you have a sloped site or a flat site?
I've already done that. The drainage has already been put in around the entire house.
Okay.
So I'm still getting some seepage.
Okay, then where does that drain pipe go to? Does it go anywhere?
It goes, it slopes down to a bank off my property, and you can see the water flowing out of it, you know, when we get heavy rain and stuff like that.
Okay, well, that's good.
So
it's working, but
yeah.
It's also flowing into your foundation.
Yes.
Mm.
I'm still getting some seepage through, like, the hairline cracks. And,
Okay, well, you can eject epoxy on the interior side of your slab, and that might provide enough resistance so that the water doesn't come in those cracks. Epoxy injection. You can also excavate around the perimeter of your foundation and seal the vertical surface of your foundation wall with a waterproofing membrane, but that's a lot of work, and that's best done during initial construction phases. But
right.
I would try epoxy. Fill those cracks with epoxy.
Okay, do I have to drill it out or open the crack up? Or?
Ideally, you'd take a 4.5-inch grinder with a diamond blade and saw a keyway maybe quarter of an inch deep along the crack and then eject the epoxy in that seam.
they make a specific epoxy for that, or just?
They do. There's a company called Sika, S-I-K-A. You can look on their website. They have injectable epoxies. It can be really complicated. You can use bigger pumps to inject epoxy, and we used to do that as part of our construction company. We just sold the pump. You install ports, and you start at the bottom of the crack, and you pump in, install these ports vertically about every 8 inches, and you start at the bottom, and you inject epoxy, and you watch the epoxy go up the crack until it starts coming out the second port above. Then you cap that port below,
yeah.
Start working your way up the wall. But that's pretty sophisticated and expensive. So you might get away with just getting a two-part epoxy that you can find at your hardware store and like plunger type and feeding that in your crack. That's what I would try as an easy fix.
Doug, thanks a lot for the call. Our guest today is Darren Tracy. It's Vox Pop on WAMC. 800-348-2551. How are you holding up over there? You all right?
They're coming left and right.
All right, we're going to keep it moving. Let's go to Fred in Colony. Fred.
Yeah, hi to both of you. I got a question. I put a deck in 1992, but when I bought the property, they said the house was taken up and cleared out, but they buried a lot of it. Well, the last pier going up the stairs onto the deck is starting to sink. And it's on boards, but I cut them out, and, you know, the best I could, but there must have been more boards underneath the dirt, you know, when they buried it. So, but now the pier is sinking.
Okay, is it a concrete pier or a wood pier?
Yes, they're 8-inch piers. They go down for frost, so they're going down about, you know, 4 foot to 52 inches. And what I did, I put a footing underneath, but it was a termite block, 12 by 16. And I put that down, and all the other piers are holding up. There was 22 of them. So that was the only one that got stuck with, you know, a landfill underneath it.
Okay.
Well, I don't know. How do I, when I jack it up?
Well, what I would do, Fred, is just jack it up and put a shim underneath where it's sagging between the top of your concrete foundation and your wood decking. And hope for the best. And if it sinks next year, another half an inch or whatever it is, do it again. At some point, it'll stop sinking. That's the easy fix.
Yeah, what if I dig the pier and then jack up the pier? How would I, you know,
jack
could
underneath
I pour
it?
Like more of a footing underneath?
If you're going to do that, you might just as well dig it out and put a complete new pier in.
Okay.
All right.
Okay. Like I said, they told me the house wasn't buried here, but you know how it goes when... Yeah.
I always like to try the easy fix first because, you know, that might work. And, you know, time is so limited in our lives, so.
Well, the thing is now, it's been about 3 years I've been noticing more and more. The second pier, the next pier back is starting to push down because it's carrying all the weight now.
Jack that baby up and shim it, too.
Okay.
Okay.
Fred,
okay.
Good luck. We appreciate the call. Peter in Schenectady. Peter.
Hi, yes. I have a sump pump in my basement that runs pretty constantly. And I was wondering, I'm on a pretty solid clay layer. If I took a well point and tried to puncture through the clay layer to get below the surface, would that reduce the amount my sump pump would run?
Before I comment on that, Peter, I just want to mention, Ray, do you see a common theme here in the summertime?
Water.
Or the springtime?
It's
water.
The waters of March, you know. Jobim.
Right. Okay, Peter. I'm not sure that would help you out because I think the water is coming in from up above, not down below. So what would you be hoping to achieve with punching a hole down through the clay, trying to drain the water down through there? Or describe that to me.
Yeah, if I got through, because I'm on like a clay, I know I'm on a really silty clay layer. If I get below that to either a bedrock or a sand or stone layer, all the water would then drain through the well point and dissipate through the sand layer versus just being stuck on top of the clay.
Well, I suppose in theory that's a good idea, but that's presupposing that you do have a sand layer down there that the water would drain to. My intuition tells me that probably won't work.
No?
I don't think so.
Okay. Thank you.
Well, thanks a lot. Bye. So, Darren Tracy, we've been setting a record here. We've taken a lot of calls already.
Okay.
I mean, I think it's time to take a deep breath. Let's regroup. We'll take a short break, okay, and then we'll come back and we'll do the same thing. Okay. Bam, 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 bam.
I'm ready.
Support for WAMT comes from Nine Pin Cider Works, serving New York hard ciders made from locally sourced apples. Tasting room open Wednesday through Sunday at 929 Broadway, downtown Albany. Be revolutionary, consider the apple. NinePinCider.com. NVT Bank, offering trust and fiduciary services, investment management, and retirement planning for individuals and businesses. NVTBank.com. Pave Tile Wood and Stone, using French artisan techniques to manufacture pre-finished oak floors, decorative and terracotta tile, and importing aged French limestone. Showroom by appointment and online, pavetile.com. The Arthur Zankel Music Center at Skidmore College, a cultural resource for the upstate region, providing a teaching, recording, and performance venue with rental options available, skidmore.edu/ZANKEL. And Spate Consulting and Coaching, Shelburne Falls, more than 20 years of working with leaders and teams committed to purposeful change. See it whole and move it forward. DLSPECHT.com.
Fox Pop on WAMC, 800-348-2551, reminiscing about Frank Zappa with our guest Darren Tracy during the break. We talk home improvement, and not Frank Zappa here on the program. This one came in via email. Before we get back to the phones, we'll take care of this one from Amanda in Belchertown, who says, we have a 1989 split ranch with a hanging ceiling and a finished basement. I want to get rid of the ceiling. What are my options for other ceiling types? We've had issues with mice in the basement, drop ceiling in past years. Would this change our options for ceiling possibilities? That's from Amanda.
Well, you could. I don't see why you couldn't install sheetrock right on top of your acoustic ceiling that you're describing. I'm assuming those tiles are stapled to some furring. So if that's the case, you could install sheetrock right over top of that. Or if you're really ambitious and wanted to subject yourself to a lot of dust and hard work, you can take those staple tiles off and go right to the existing furring that's there.
That would get rid of the mice problem, right? There would be no gap?
No, I don't think there's any way to get rid of the mice problem. Cats or traps. I mean, mice, they can get in anywhere. You know, the diameter of a pencil.
Yeah.
One of the guys that works with me, Andy, he's been working with us since our construction company formed in 1988. He told me that he was doing some wood framing, and during lunchtime, he saw a mouse go through a hole the size, the diameter of a pen.
Wow, unbelievable. Well, yeah. You know, I guess there is no empirical evidence to suggest that they work, but I will tell you that those little ultrasonic things you plug into the outlets, they work. We had a issue with a couple of mice maybe 8 or 9 years ago, and I bought one of those things. I bought the traps, got rid of the mice. Put one of those in, I've not seen a mouse since.
I'd say that's empirical evidence right there.
But it's not, though. It's anecdotal evidence.
Well, it's empirical and anecdotal.
All right, fair enough. But enough about science. Let's go to Mark.
No, this is part about science.
Mark in Salem, you're on. Mark.
Hi. I have the problem with a rat that got in the same way. I told my cat, you get that ratty, and that night he did.
Good. Hey. That's good work.
He thought it was a pet, so he didn't bother it for a while, and I finally told him, you get it, and he did. I've been a home contractor and I've retired. I probably have rewired and redone the electrical systems in maybe 50 houses, mostly older homes. And I've always had a problem with the conceptual, or try to understand why it is necessary, according to at least the code that I've been working under, that you ground your plumbing system to the electrical box. I can see why that's true if you're in the city where you have a metal pipe coming in, but most of the rural systems have a black PVC pipe from the well, and the pump and everything is not grounded. And also now that they're using PEX a lot, I don't see that. It seems counterintuitive to ground your system to the plumbing, because if something goes wrong, it's going to go through the piping and into wherever you're, say you're in the bathtub and you've got a short somewhere else. You don't want to be electrocuted in the tub. So I've never bothered to put the electrical strap between the box and the plumbing system because of all the plastic that's between that and the earth. Do you have any insight into that?
Well, I can comment that it's probably a carryover from days gone by when there wasn't any plastic piping. The plastic is not a very good conductor, so I don't think it's going to help you carry any stray voltage to the ground outside. But you know, if you do have copper pipes or old steel drainage systems, as an electrician, you know that grounds cause a lot of problem, and any kind of stray voltage around that you can take care of by getting it out to the ground is what you should do.
Well, that's the point, is that if you're between the say submersible pump or the pump in the well to your pressure tank, the line is plastic, and so if you ground it to that, you're grounding it to something that's not really grounded properly.
Right,
anyway.
That's not going to help you.
Yeah, but the code calls for it to be grounded, and I never could. No one's ever been able to explain to me why that's the case. I've argued with the electrical inspector, and he said, no, that's what you have to do. Yeah. So I do it, but when I have to. But at my own house, I didn't do it because I thought it was not appropriate, and I don't quite. I've never been able. No one's ever been able to explain to me why they do it.
Well, that may be a carryover from days gone by when all the pipe was metal.
That's what I thought.
All right.
Okay, thank you.
Mark, thanks a lot for the call. Our number to call is 800-348-2551. Darren Tracy is our guest, 800-348-2551. Let's go to Richard in Whitesboro. Richard.
Hi, thanks, Ray. Great show.
Thanks.
I have a two-part question concerning roofing. I had a contractor want to put shingles on, and he's going to put a double length or height of protective membrane along the edge, so it'll be probably 6 feet. But he said you don't really need, and it's not good for the roof, to have tar paper over the rest. And I was wondering if he's right or wrong, or where he's coming from.
Well, in my opinion, I think it's desirable to have tar paper over the rest.
Is there any benefit, do you think? Maybe airflow or something?
Oh, not having it?
Yeah, not having it.
I don't know of any benefit of not having it.
Okay. Along the same lines, I have storage in my attic, and I want to keep the storage, and I wanted to insulate it, though. And what's your opinion about putting the foam insulation in the rafters? Would that hurt the roof by keeping the heat there?
No, spray foam will not hurt the rafters itself, but the installation of spray foam insulation has to be a really good job so you don't have any voids, because if there are voids or missed areas, then
counteracts the whole thing.
Yeah, well, that moisture can go up and hit a cold surface, cool, and condense, and you'll have rotted wood. But theoretically, and if done well, spray foam insulation is a really good method of insulation. But
so the heat, the sun hitting on the roof won't have any heat coming out into the attic. Will the shingles get heated up more?
Shingles may get heated
underneath.
Up more. Yeah, that may be an issue. The life of your shingle may be decreased. But your attic won't heat up more. It'll heat up less because you've got that insulation there protecting your attic from the heat outside.
Would you recommend either closed foam or open foam?
Closed foam is more expensive and maybe unnecessary. It's a better vapor barrier. I don't want to give you a definitive answer on that.
Smart.
I would research that a little bit more because you've got the vapor barrier concerns and moisture can move through the open foam more. So I'll hold comment and ask you to do some more research, or you can contact me after. If you send me an email, I'll do some research myself so I know the answer to
that. What's that email again, Darren?
It's darren@westbranchinc.com.
Richard, thank you very much for the call. Over to Elaine in Williamstown. Elaine?
Yes, hello.
You're on.
Okay. I have a 1898 clapboard house, but, in the winter I can feel the breeze through the electrical outlets, so I was contemplating taking the original clapboard off and putting 2 inches of rigid foam and then wrapping the house, but then I would be pretty much out of funding for the exterior,
yeah.
And I was going to be stuck putting high-quality vinyl on instead, and I wondered if I should just paint the original clapboards and take really good care of them and not mind that the house isn't tight, but that would be pretty much the same amount of money, and I don't know whether I should go with keeping the original clapboard that is serviceable but would need a whole bunch of care, or going for the more efficient insulation to make the choice of that one.
Yeah, I like this. It's a good practical question. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, money always complicates the decision-making
Absolutely.
Process, doesn't it? Here's another option. You could install blown insulation in the cavities through your existing clapboards. They could drill small holes in the clapboards and blow insulation in from the outside, plug those, and then paint those. That might be the most economical solution.
But what if I already have fiberglass in the wall.
Oh, you do? Okay.
I was just trying to bump it up over the fiberglass.
So at some point you installed the fiberglass, or you certainly?
No, that was done before we bought the house in the 90s.
Okay, yeah. Well, you could seal penetrations. I'm always a big promoter of sealing penetrations. All your electrical outlets, you can seal those with spray foam, and they have these little foam pads that you
I've done the foam pad things on them, but that hasn't done anything.
Okay, you can also go down in your basement area and seal the sill area, because a lot of air comes into the building through that sill area, and there's such a thing called stack effect, where the colder air comes in towards the bottom of your building and then exits to the top.
Mm.
So if you can seal where it's coming in, you can help yourself with all that infiltration problem that you might have.
Okay, that's a really good thought.
Give that a try. That's not all that expensive to do that air sealing.
I know that, because Mass Saves is going to do that for me.
Oh, great. Okay. Terrific. Elaine, thanks for the call.
Thank you so much. Okay, bye-bye.
Bye. 1-800-348-2551 is our telephone number. Over to line two, Jeremy in Rhinebeck.
Hi, how are you doing today?
Good.
Good. My question is, we have a new addition that has been built on a concrete floating slab, and we're looking to tile it, but I'm concerned about the tiles cracking, and just what your thoughts or suggestions would be to either prevent that, or if it was a good idea, or other alternatives.
Well, if the subgrade was compacted well before the slab was poured, and the slab doesn't have a tendency to crack itself, the tiles shouldn't crack. Concrete's a great substrate to have tile adhered to.
Okay.
With a cementitious mortar.
Yep, we did notice a couple cracks that appeared over the winter. The slab's about a year and a half old. I thought there might be some natural settling, but there was a couple cracks that did appear, so I was concerned that it might be moving a little bit, and I know there are some membranes available to help with some movement, but I didn't know if it would still be recommended on a floating slab or not.
Well, I don't think the membrane is going to help you regarding slab movement. Let me ask you this, Jeremy. Do you know if the slab was thickened around the perimeter? We call it a thickened haunch.
Or is it
just poured the same
thickness
all the way?
Nope, there was it was definitely poured a little bit thicker on the around the perimeter. The slab does extend past the interior of the house, because there's a covered porch, so the slab extends outside of the heated area. But it was also poured on top of foam insulation and a vapor barrier.
Okay, is there any insulation around the outside of the slab? Extending horizontally out away from the slab?
Yes.
There is. Okay. That's important because if not, then frost can get underneath that slab and lift. It sounds like it was constructed the way it should be.
Okay.
So
okay.
I think you might be okay. Those might be just shrinkage cracks to which you were referring.
Okay.
Thanks, Jeremy. We appreciate the call. Let's go over to Colleen in Pittsfield. Colleen, you're on.
I was just calling about I'm interested in buying a home, and everything has gone right except for there's asbestos covering the pipes in the cellar.
Okay.
And they are not exposed, but I don't know what to do, if it should be removed. I'm told if it's contained, it's not dangerous, or if I should seal it with something.
Okay. Is this a finished basement, Colleen?
No, it's not. It's an older home. It's 1950. It was
okay.
Built.
I wouldn't worry about it too much. As long as there's not anything disturbing the asbestos, then...
Right.
Generally, it's okay in place. You can seal it with different types of products, but if you're not using the basement space and it's not active, I wouldn't worry about too much. As a homeowner, you can always abate the asbestos yourself. You don't need to get a contractor to do that. But, I'd take the proper safety precautions if you're going to do that. Spray the insulation down, have a respirator on. So on and so
forth. Right. Yeah, I would have somebody do that for me.
If you have somebody do that, they should be licensed to abate that asbestos then.
All right.
Yes.
Colleen, thanks a lot.
Okay, thank you.
Appreciate the call. Let's see. Oh, I guess we have time for one or two more. Let's go to Doug in Windham, Mass. Doug.
Hey, that's Wendell. But
Wendell, I'm sorry.
Yeah.
Says Wendell.
With all due respect to the fellow who called about the electrical grounding...
Yeah.
He's missing an important component. And that is that when you have copper pipes and you ground your electrical system to the copper pipes, you have to, if you're in the country, you have to drive a rod into the ground, literally, like a 10-foot or as far as you can get a rod into the ground.
Ground rod,
your pipes to that. If you don't do that, every time you have a lightning storm, your TV, your DVR, every ground fault electrical outlet in your house is going to blow every time there's lightning.
Right.
So you've got to do that. So you literally have to ground the pipes, not just ground the wiring to the pipe.
Right. I think he's aware of that. If he's rewired.
I didn't say so.
He was just taking that for granted.
But if the pipe was in the ground, then it's grounded, right?
It's grounded, absolutely. The lightning will go to the ground.
Yeah.
Right.
When it hits a tree, it goes to the ground. But if your pipes aren't grounded, then it's not going to do any good. So I don't know. What he said didn't make any sense about not needing it. It's not true. You'd have to ground the pipes to the ground. And if you don't have, if instead you've got plastic water pipe everywhere, then you've got to ground your wiring directly to that rod in the ground.
Hang on now. Go ahead, Darren.
Okay. I would have to assume that he understands that you need grounding rods. He said he was an electrician and rewired 20 or more homes. So I'm assuming that he knows that there's grounding rods out there. I think the point that he was trying to make is that the connection between a certain piece of equipment, the water pump, and destination was made with plastic piping versus steel piping. And he was talking about the bridge between that. The pump itself would have a ground wire. So I think the point that he was trying to make is that it may be an outdated code because of the plastic piping.
Darren Tracy, we are done. Thank you, sir. Once again, the website?
Darren, my email is darren@westbranchinc.com, and the website is West Branch Inc.
Thank you, sir. We appreciate you being here. Support comes from the Hyde Collection, an art museum and historic house in Glens Falls, New York. Open Tuesday through Saturday, 10 to 5, Sunday, 12 to 5, HydeCollection.org. Temple Sinai announcing their annual Community Purim Carnival for all ages, Sunday, March 20th, 1 to 3:30 p.m. at Gavin Park, Wilton, New York, 518-584-8730. At Northeast Solar in Hatfield, Massachusetts, helping Pioneer Valley residents live more sustainably with solar power for home, business, or farm, keep solar local, northeast-solar.com. Thanks again to Darren Tracy. Thanks to you for listening and for your great calls. Zach Malloy is our engineer. Bruce Herbach answered the phone. Jessica Marshall is our producer. I'm Ray Graff. Stay tuned now for news.